Today's Monday, right? So on Saturday, it was, we discussed, what did we discuss on Saturday? Denukasura. You remember. And today we're going to discuss? Balaram. Right, Balaram. Well, the beginning of this story is very wonderful because it's just a very beautiful narration of Vrindavan, the forest of Vrindavan, and the cowherd boys enjoying within the forest of Vrindavan. So we'll read. Vrindavan is a very beautiful place. It is filled with birds, animals, and flowers. Throughout the forest, there are many waterfalls, sounding very pleasant, and crystal clear lakes dotted with colorful blooming lotus flowers. The spray from the waterfalls makes the air fresh, clean, and cool. The streams and lakes make the grass grow lusciously green. The cows are very happy because there is so much fresh grass for them to eat. There's one of the cows, kind of disguised, hiding behind a tree. The air is filled with the sweet scent of the flowers and the songs of the birds. The peacocks are crowing and dancing happily among the flowers. The deer wander peacefully throughout the forest scenery. The croaking of the frogs adds to the sound of the forest, making it even more pleasant. Krishna and his older brother Balaram wander in this beautiful forest along with their cowherd boyfriends and their cows. They decorate themselves with leaves, peacock feathers, and garlands of flowers. The boys sing, dance, and wrestle with each other. Krishna dances and plays his flute. Some of the boys sing while others clap and bugle on buffalo horns. They praise Krishna, saying, "Krishna, you dance so nicely." Walking arm in arm, bowing to each other, and having great fun, they march deeper into the delightful forest. As the day goes on, they continue to play. Sometimes they play blind man's bluff. Children? You respond to that, right? What is blind man's bluff? You ever play that game? And then?
And then the person who puts it on the cloth, and you have to find the other people.
Yeah. Okay. And then when they find the other people, what do? They have to say who that other person is.
Then they have to say the other person's name, and that other person's name, and it has to tie the cloth around his head.
Okay. You ever played that game before?
I did.
You did? Where? Oh. Then you stopped playing after you got a cut on your arm?
I played this Friday.
This Friday? Blind Man's Bluff.
In the park. In the park, in the clubhouse of this complex.
Okay. How about you? You ever played Blind Man's Bluff? Never heard of it, right? You're the one that cut his arm? No. Okay. Well, there's one of the cowherd boys playing blind man's bluff. He's got the blindfold on and he's reaching out, and the other boys are hiding and running in all directions, trying to tag each other. Sometimes They play hide and seek. Mm-hmm. We've all played hide and seek, right? Hide and seek. They climb up in trees. Look at this one. Run over the hills. There's that one. Or hide behind the rocks. Sometimes the boys pretend to be a king. That's Krishna who is the king. With his servants who are paying their obeisances and fanning him and playing bugles in honor of him. Krishna and Balaram enjoy playing these games with their friends. Each day in the wonderful forest of Vrindavan, they love to imitate the forest deer. There's the deer, and there's the boy imitating the forest deer, taking the branches of trees like antlers. And many kinds of birds. There's the bird, and there's the cowherd boy. Shh. This is all for you guys. You're too absorbed. He wants one of those pieces of paper. Thanks. Now you're going to be peaceful, right? Shanti, right? Six, seven, eight. Just counting the number of seconds that you're peaceful. 10, 11, 15, 17. Pretty good. Almost to 20. Okay. They would sometimes jump around like frogs. Sometimes play various jokes. Sometimes ride in swings. And sometimes imitate the monarchs. They also have fun swinging from the vines underneath the gorgeous canopy of tree branches. The basic idea is they're just having fun all day long. While the other boys were dancing, Krishna and Balaram would sometimes accompany them with song and instrumental music, and sometimes the two lords would praise the boys, saying, "Very good, very good." In this way, Krishna and Balaram played all sorts of well-known games as they wandered through the rivers, hills, valleys, bushes, trees, and lakes of Vrindavan. Here they're wrestling, and the one who loses the wrestling has to carry the winner on his back. This is Krishna carrying Sridham on his back, because Sridham beat Krishna. While in the forest of Vrindavan, Krishna is all attractive, so he is naturally attracting not only the cowherd boys, but all the deer, the peacocks, the swans, all types of birds and animals. It's described, even in the summer, of course, today's summers in Vrindavan are quoting some children that went recently to Vrindavan this summer. "Maharaj, it was like an oven. So hot. And no relief. I mean, even at night it was so hot. And during the daytime it was too hot." That was the report in Vrindavan. But when Krishna was present, it was just like spring. And spring is such a nice season. Sometimes Krishna would sit under a tree and just play his flute. And all the cowherd boys, and of course the cows, would come gathering around too, hearing Krishna playing upon his flute. Here they're making like the frogs jumping. Here they're, well, we'll read what it says. Sometimes The cowherd boys would play with bilva or kumbha fruits, and sometimes with handfuls of amalaki fruits. At other times they would play the games of trying to touch one another or trying to identify somebody while one is blindfolded. And sometimes they would imitate animals and birds. There's the blind man's bluff imitating the frogs. What's this one? One of the cowherd, anyway, monkey, maybe. Monkey hanging from a tree. You ever play that game? All the time. Sorry. One day, as they played, a great demon, well, he was in disguise, named Pralambasura, there's what he looked like otherwise, sneaked into the forest disguised as a friend. He hid behind a tree watching the boys, thinking of a plan. This is thinking of a plan to kidnap Krishna and Balaram. But there's Krishna and Balaram. And Krishna knew, because he's omniscient, he knew exactly how Pralamba was thinking. Krishna, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, knew exactly what Pralambasura was thinking. And so, Krishna began to make a plan to kill him. Since the Supreme Lord Krishna, who had appeared in the Dasharatha dynasty, sees everything, he understood who the demon was. Still, the Lord pretended to accept the demon as a friend, while at the same time seriously considering how to kill him. This is the cowherd boys, apparently innocent of what the plan was, and Pralamba, who has his design to destroy Krishna. So Krishna came up with the following plan. He gathered all his friends together and said, "Let's play another game. Let's have wrestling in two groups." So the two groups divided. Krishna was elected captain of one group. Balaram was elected captain of the other group, and they started picking. You ever do this when you play games? Sometimes. Sometimes. Soccer. Okay. Okay. This is... Imagine having Krishna, your soccer captain, and Balaram, the opposing soccer captain. Pretty intense, huh? So, they picked their teams, and they began to match up. Krishna welcomed Pralambasura into the wrestling program. Krishna put his arm around Pralamba, pretending to be his dear friend, and some of the cowherd boys, they took care of the cows while the games were going on. Half of the boys, along with Pralambasura, took the side of Krishna. The other took the side of Balaram. And then the fight began. There's Balaram. He's victorious. There's Pralamba down on the ground. Krishna and Sudama are still fighting. And there's... who's this? Oh, one of the cowherd boys that's just watching. Look, the demigods are observing the fun. Oops. Okay. They then played the childhood game known as Hari Nakirdanam, in which each boy paired off with the opponent and all the boys simultaneously attacked their respective rivals. The boys who lost the fight had to carry the winners on their shoulders. Krishna, by his sweet will, lost his fight to Sridham. Pralambasura lost his fight to Balaram, and Bhadrasain, that's over here, Bhadrasain lost to Vrishabh. So the losers have to carry the winners on their shoulders. So there's Pralamba carrying Balaram. There's Krishna carrying Sridham. And there's Bhadrasen carrying Vrishabh. And one of the cowherd boys is watching on, and the cows are enjoying. Defeated, the Supreme Lord Krishna carried Sridham, Bhadrasen carried Vrishabh, and Pralamba carried Balaram. There they are. Balaram. Bhadrasen. And Krishna, whoops. What happened? Krishna is being carried by Sridham. There we go. Or the other way around. Pralambasura wanted to kidnap Balaram without any trouble from Krishna. With Balaram on his shoulders, he ran far away from when everyone else was playing. One description was that as he was running deep into the forest, Balaram was enjoying the ride. This is great fun. He's taking me for a long ride. This is great. And Krishna was calling Balaram. Balaram thought, Krishna's wanting to enjoy like I'm enjoying, but I'm having so much fun. But as the demon Pralamba was going further and further into the forest, he started becoming larger in his shape. And as he became larger in his shape, Balaram was wondering, what's going on? This coward boy is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And soon his big fangs and his long nails and his huge grotesque body. So Balaram started to understand what he was doing. And he became mahima, very, very heavy. And as he became heavy, the demon's body got bigger and bigger and bigger. Balaram began to wonder, this is very strange, this cowherd boy. The demon now appeared in his original horrible form. He was as high as the sky and had fiery eyes and sharp teeth. Suddenly Balaram realized this was not a friend, but a demon who wanted to kill him. So this has many nice illustrations. This is a stained glass window with Balaram riding on the back of Pralambasura in the courtyard on the other side of the stained glass window. Lord Balaram, who carries the plow weapon, saw the gigantic body of the demon as he moved swiftly in the sky with his blazing eyes, fiery hair, terrible teeth reaching toward his scowling brows, and an amazing effulgence generated from his armlets, crown, and earrings. The Lord seemed to be a little frightened. Remembering the actual situation, the fearless Balaram understood that the demon was trying to kidnap him and take him away from his companions. The Lord then became furious and struck the demon's head with his hard fist, just as Indra, the king of the demigods, strikes a mountain with his thunderbolt. Lots of nice paintings. That's a front view of the same thing for the back view of. Looks like the same artist. With his powerful fist, Balaram hit the head of the demon, just as the thunderbolt strikes the top of a mountain. Thus, smashed by Balaram's fist, Pralamba's head immediately cracked open. The demon vomited blood from his mouth and lost all consciousness And then with a great noise he fell lifeless on the ground, like a mountain devastated by Indra. The cowherd boys were most astonished to see how the powerful Balaram had killed the demon Pralamba, and they exclaimed, "Excellent! Excellent!" That's not what Pralamba said. Look how big his body is. After being struck by the fist of Balaram, Pralamba fell lifeless to the ground, making a loud crash. Blood poured from his mouth. Hearing the loud noise, all the boys ran quickly to see what had happened. Arriving at the scene, the boys were amazed at the ghastly sight, while Krishna began praising his brother Balaram. Everyone began to congratulate Balaram. Overwhelmed with affection for him, they began to hug him with great fondness as the demigods in the heaven joyfully showered flowers on Balaram. Then, Krishna and Balaram, along with their cowherd friends and cows, made their way back to their homes after a long and exciting day in Vrindavan. Here's Pralambasura taking Balaram away. This is their wrestling match. Well, this is the pairing up in two teams, and they're wrestling, and the boy's starting to get carried. The sinful Pralamba having been killed, the demigods felt extremely happy, and they showered flower garlands upon Lord Balaram and praised his excellence, the excellence of his deed. So, here's a description of Pralambasura in his previous life. To worship Lord Shiva, one day the Yaksha king Kuvera had the Yakshas place here and there in his beautiful forest many raksha amulets made of flowers. When some of the flowers were stolen, the powerful Yaksha king Kuvera spoke a curse. He said, "Any demigod or human that takes any of these flowers will become a demon. That is my curse." Then one day, a Gandharva named Vijaya was passing through the garden of Kuvera, singing the names of Lord Vishnu as he went. And when he came to the Chaitrarata forest, he was gathering some flowers to offer to Vishnu. Immediately as he was picking some of the flowers, at once he was transformed into a demon. So he came before Kuvera with folded hands and made a plea to him. "Oh, Kuvera, please relieve me of this curse." Kuvera said, "You are a pure-hearted devotee of Lord Vishnu. O respectful one, please don't lament. At the end of Dwarpa Yuga, in Bandiravan forest, by the Jamuna shore, you will attain liberation by Lord Balaram's hand. Of this there is no doubt." In this way, the Huhu's Gandharva son became a great demon, by Kuvera's grace, attained liberation. Not just liberation. He attained directly the association of Lord Balaram. So now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as we discussed on Saturday, these two demons killed by Balaram signify or represent characteristic obstacles for a devotee in the path of spiritual life. Pralambasura represents lusty inclinations or desire for personal gain and honor. Well, this is called the latter. you know what that is in the office place, right? The corporate ladder. Only when our dear fellow reaches the top of the ladder, he dismisses the very same persons who helped him get to the top of the ladder with the desire for personal gain and honor. So, a classic of this manifestation is Duryodhana. Because he was so envious of the Pandavas that he was ready to take any wicked plot, plan, or deed in order to get his way and demonstrate his superior prowess. But ultimately he was destroyed. Does anybody know this story? This is Hitopadesh, one of these classic stories. The fox and the mice. I don't know the detail of the story, but the story kind of tells itself. And the mice. So in order to capture the mice, the fox pretends that he's a saint. And he tells the mice, I'm receiving the blessings of Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, and Lord Shiva. So he gets the mice to dance, or to play musical instruments while he dances, and as their attention is all absorbed in celebrating musical merriment, he grabs the mice to devour them, and they flee here and there. When they realize that he's a pretender, they come and attack him, finish him. I'm sure there's a detailed description of that. And that's the end of the whole presentation. So, okay, so we finished the description of Palumbasura. So these two, Dhenukasura and Palumbasura, they're the two demons out of all the demons in Vrindavan that Krishna killed. There were some demons outside of Vrindavan that Balaram killed, but of all the demons that Krishna killed, these two specifically are indicating obstacles in the path of our own devotional service that we have to be particularly attentive to. So, can we go? Let's do this. I don't know how to do it otherwise. Yeah, there we go. The desire for personal gain and honor. In Madhurya Kandambini, it describes the anarthas that block our progress in spiritual life. And the general principle of material life is desire for sense gratification. I just heard Prabhupada describing this in a lecture in Melbourne. The essence, we've all heard it so many times, but the essence of material pleasure is sex pleasure. So lustiness can mean explicitly lusty sex desire, or in a broader sense, just an overwhelming urge to be a sense gratifier in varieties of ways and manifestations. And if one becomes a little above that sense gratification, gross, lusty disposition, then one wants to become an enjoyer in a subtle way of some gain, some honor, and even in spiritual life. If one becomes a little successful in spiritual life, one becomes proud of that little success in spiritual life that I've attained. It's in other words, it's very difficult to overcome. Even if the grosser levels have been surpassed, the subtler levels of very strongly trying to be the enjoyer of the material atmosphere and even the enjoyer of a little spiritual success. So we have to be vigilant and we have to call upon Lord Balaram for the spiritual strength necessary to be successful, making our path back to Krishna. And if Pralambasura comes your way, you know what to do. Balaram! And don't yield to lust or to desire for personal gain, some honor. It's one of those things in spiritual life that's, in certain ways, it's a little perplexing because we're supposed to show respect and deference and honor to others, but at the same time, we're not to receive that ourselves. So it seems like a difficult situation. When I can say, oh, you've done such a nice job making a nice picture of Krishna. So I'm offering some praise. But if you take that praise and say, oh, just see, Maharaj is recognizing my artist ability, then that's pride. Right? So you can't be proud. No way. But what do we do when we receive some praise? Turn the picture upside down, right?
We thank Krishna for giving us the ability.
Very nice. We convey that nice praise directly to Krishna. Krishna, you're so kind. You've given some ability. And now this nice Vaishnava is recognizing that ability that is actually your ability. Krishna, you're so kind. You're so merciful. Very nice answer. Do people praise you very often? It's a nice answer. Let's see, next time I praise you if you remember that one. Oh, such a nice picture of Krishna. Where did you get that ability? What's the answer?
Krishna.
Krishna. Okay. I cued you so that you wouldn't forget it. Okay. Okay, so tomorrow we're going to observe Balaram's appearance day. And we'll hear some more discussion about Lord Balaram and his wonderful pastimes. Some very, very, very nice pastimes that we didn't describe yet. And some nice pictures that go with them. Any discussion? Oh! Go ahead, you got the floor.
What does Palamba represent?
Don't you remember? Should we go back? Does anybody remember? Pralamba. Huh? Huh? Okay. Anyone else? Yes?
On this, is the same topic that you're saying, that one should thank Krishna for giving the ability, but another argument that might say, will say that there is something in me, Krishna's ability is available for everyone, but there is something in me because of which, you know, this is getting reflected. So there is some reason still for pride. How to counter that?
Whatever it is that we may have, even on a soul level, is something that it's if it is there, it's there because of Krishna. It's there because of Krishna. We can take some, if there's room for pride, Prabhupada has described this. You can put your hand down now. Thank you. If there's room for pride, the pride is that pride in Krishna. We're part of Krishna's wonderful family. Krishna's accepted us. We're proud of our Lord and Master. And that's appropriate. But as far as my own self is concerned, apart from Krishna, what is there? Anything seen apart from Krishna is illusion. It's fundamental. Does that address your question? Same question. Yeah. Really?
The only thing is, in addition to that, is we also talk about the corporate culture.
Corporate culture, okay. Yeah.
What if you're on the other side, falling on the ladder?
Other side?
Yeah.
The one that got pushed down?
Yes.
We could consider, it depends. But we can consider that person who just is on the top part of number two over there on the left-hand side, what an unfortunate person. Can you put your arm down? Thanks. He's thinking he's now the king or the ruler, the top dog. Wait a while. And someone's going to come and do the same thing to him. He'll be down at the bottom thinking, oh, what happened? So if we're hankering for that position ourselves, we'll feel terrible. If we understand the material world is such a place that people are very, very busy busily engaged in this mundane competition program that takes them completely away from their own spiritual identity and spiritual reality. You just, like, don't participate in it. Instead, we simply do our activities in service to Krishna. And with the spirit of doing our activities in service to Krishna, Krishna is our shelter, Krishna is our support, Krishna is our sustenance, Krishna is our everything. So that program can go on around us, and it can even go, you know, where people are trying to push us up or pull us down. It's just like not affecting us. It's not just in the corporate realm, it's in the material world. In social circles, it's not just, you know, in the corporate workplace. It's the material world is like that. As long as one has a contamination of rebelliousness towards Krishna, then one is coveting Krishna's position. And coveting Krishna's position manifests itself in coveting another's position. And I want that other position. And I'll take whatever means I can to get that position. So it's not just a corporate place. It may, you know, bear its strong features in the corporate workplace. But it, you know, it's in the world. All around us. So we can choose to not participate. Even persons around us are participating, trying to draw us into the program. We don't have to participate. We stay fixed in service to Krishna. Have you tried like that in the corporate realm? And what happens?
The game is on. People are trying to do this way, and you have a choice. Either you can participate, or you don't participate. But
and if you don't participate, in one sense, it's can you? Settle down. If you don't participate, it looks like you're not a good member in that corporate space. You know, you're out. But on the other hand, if your work ethic is, I don't participate in that program, but I work very seriously, sincerely, and devotedly because I'm working for Krishna, regardless of, you know, which way the Ferris wheel is moving. That person is a steady worker. It is a very valuable member of the team. And who's captain and who's, you know, in which position on the team doesn't matter. Something? No?
In the symbolism, someone caves into pride. It could be their downfall at any moment, and Balaram, who is enjoying being carried on the shoulder of Paralambo,
yeah,
almost leads to his downfall.
Okay. Let's see if we can get that nice picture. Oops. All right. That convey your point?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like a constant battle can't be won anytime you do it. The battle against pride is a constant battle.
You with him? He's addressing the corporate scene, comparing it to the... Well, rather than me explaining, let him explain it. You're addressing his question.
Yeah, like, it was enjoyable.
No, that's not the same. Balaram was not prideful. He was just playing. I mean, in other words, prior to Pralamba coming on the scene, they were just playing and playing and playing. They're like little boys playing, imitating the forest animals, imitating the birds. They would, you know, one would be a lion, rah! Another would be the deer and would run. They're just playing, swinging on swings. So here comes a wrestling match. They're just playing. But one of them has evil intent. And innocently, Balaram wasn't seeing his evil intent. He wasn't like, oh, I'm the big man, and you're the small man. wasn't of a competitive and envious spirit like that. But he was, on the other hand, Krishna enjoys carrying Sridham on his shoulders. It's not like that. It's not like it's not like this other picture. You know, I enjoy another person carrying me up to the top of the corporate ladder and then I kick him. It's not Balaram. The correspondence doesn't match. Something else? Yes?
We often carry this same tendency even in our devotional service. And many a time when I come, I put in my own heart in a situation where I feel like, you know, some feelings like that comes. One of the things that I try to justify myself is like, on the principle of abundance.
On the principle of?
Abundance. Like, in material world, how the training is, like, there is not enough. So if you don't prove yourself, you cannot smart enough, you won't get it. But in spiritual life, there is abundance. So, I mean, there is no place for competition or comparison in service.
I got the material competition part, but I didn't get the other part. What is it that you're communicating?
I'm just trying to understand that that's how I try to work on myself, that when I come across those situations and services, I try to work with the conception that in spiritual world there is abundance of mercy. So there is
abundance. Okay, that's what I... Okay.
So it's not limited, like material world.
Yes. And second, spiritual conception is the goal is that Krishna is to be pleased. So if someone else is pleasing Krishna, that's the goal. And one becomes very happy that someone else is pleasing Krishna because Krishna is happy. Not that, someone else is pleasing Krishna. I couldn't please Krishna like that, so I'm envious if that person is able to please Krishna. The principle, Prabhupada taught us again and again, because our Western mentality was very competitive, is competitive. So he explained that in spiritual life, we don't engage in material competition, but Prabhupada encouraged spiritual competition. And in spiritual competition, it's like the cowherd boys would go to try to touch Krishna. And whoever touched Krishna first, that boy won. And it was just happiness to Krishna. So whoever touches Krishna first wins. And that's nice, because Krishna enjoys. So he told us that a life where there's no competition is like a stone. But in spiritual life, the competition is who can please Krishna most, or who can please Krishna first. It's joyful. It's not mean-spirited. It's for the happiness of Krishna. So like you're making the point of abundance is without limit. But there's also the purpose for whom we're doing our activity. It takes away the competitive spirit. Because the goal is Krishna is to be pleased. You're trying to please Krishna, and he's trying to please Krishna, and we're all trying to please Krishna, and Krishna becomes pleased, and that's the goal. The more Krishna is pleased, the more the goal is achieved. The competitive spirit is gone. Material competitive spirit. But spiritual competition, who can please Krishna first? Who can please Krishna the most? Oh, it's very nice. Anything else? Well, I'm so glad you're sitting in the front row. Because he plucked flowers from Kuvera's garden. Just like that neighbor that called the police because we parked in front of his house. Supposing you wanted to go in front of his house and pick some flowers to offer to the deity. He's going to call the police, that guy. He's not Kuvera. He can't curse you that you become a demon. But he's going to call the police. Because that's the kind of person he is. So don't go pick flowers and say, "Oh, I was picking them for Vishnu." And everything belongs to Vishnu. You're in trouble. Right? Devotees used to do that. Go, you know, all around the neighborhood and take off everybody's flowers. Because we didn't have money and we had deities to worship, so we just stole everybody's flowers. Caused a big problem. Prabhupada said, "Oh, you can't do that. You can't steal people's flowers. Even if it's for Krishna." Okay? You have another question.
What does lusty inclination mean?
I didn't catch it. Did you catch what he said?
What does lusty inclinations mean?
Lusty inclinations. You'll learn about that one of these days. Mm-hmm. Lusty inclination means boy-girl stuff. You know about boy-girl stuff? Okay. That's what lusty inclination is. He gets it. Anything else? Yes?
Well, like, how should we take, like, these complaints, like, something like, say, car incident, like someone complained for car, you know? How should we take these incidents? Like, how should
park your cars in the right way. That's what we should do. Because in this world, there are such people. Don't park in front of my house. Even it's legal. Don't park in front of my house. So you don't park in front of their house. Because they'll have a conniption and call the police and disrupt the program. So just don't park in front of their house. It's people like that in the world. Just, you know, respect them. Poor fellow. Can't stand to have so many cars on the street. If he was having the function, it'd be different, right? But when someone else is having the function, who's parking their car in my house? Then there are people like that in the world. So we just respect them. We don't disturb them. We have our park our car somewhere else. On holidays, take the person some prasadam. Here's a nice gift for you. Like nothing ever happened, right? You're such a nice neighbor. Thought we'd give you a nice gift. Something like that. Once a year, I visit in Trinidad, and where the temple is, there's a person across the street that has an amplification system set up, so that whenever they have kirtan in the temple, he turns on his amplification system as loud as the thing can go until the kirtan is over, and then he turns it off. And there's nothing they can do, just having kirtan. But, you know, he can't stand it. So he has to have music that's louder than our kirtan. And what can they do? He lives across the street. can't like, you know, we're going to move further down the street. They just like, they built the temple. So I just put up with it. And after a while, you get used to, you know, when I first heard it, I was like, what's that? So it's the guy across the street, and he has this amplification system, and he's been doing it for 12 years. Okay. You get used to it. It's better than what happened in Brooklyn. They used to break our windows and burn our cars. So we used to have silent, but no musical instruments for Mangalarti. They have to clap hands softly for Mangalarti. Anyone else? Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.